Hello, I'm Preston Schleinkofer. Welcome to Civil Defense Radio, where we discuss all things civil defense. Civil defense is about building community resiliency by becoming better informed, prepared, and organized to meet whatever disasters might affect you and your community. This episode, we're speaking with David Stuckenberg. He is a global social entrepreneur, defense strategist, author, and inventor. He is founder of the Electromagnetic Defense Task Force and the San Antonio Electromagnetic Defense Initiative. He is also founder and chairman of the American Leadership and Policy Foundation. As a defense strategist, David leads global programs at the U.S. State Department and frequently advises the Joint Staff, NATO, and the White House. He earned a PhD at King's College London and a master's at George Washington University. David, welcome to Civil Defense Radio.
Hey, Preston, I'm very excited to be here, and I really want to thank your listeners for joining, for caring about our national security and our nation's well-being. It really takes proactivity to get this done, and it's about building on good foundations, and this really helps establish that.
Yes, I agree. And it's a pleasure having you here today. We first met back in 2018 in Washington, D.C. at the InfraGuard EMP SIG conference, and that was also the first time I got to hear Lieutenant General Quast speak about what you guys were doing, and man, it was fantastic hearing him, and then last year also getting an opportunity to hear him speak was good, and then I got to have him on the radio show. So that was an extra blessing. So our listeners, I'm sure, have enjoyed his two-part episode that we had. And matter of fact, it's one of the biggest downloads we've had in our history. So I suspect that this episode with you, with the information we're going to be speaking about, which is surrounding resiliency, is going to be a huge one as well.
Well, I tell you, General Quast is a leader among leaders, and I always count it a privilege to hear what he has to say. He's articulate and forceful, and I certainly think he's an example for all of us to follow. And we have much to thank him for as a nation, and I certainly have much to thank him for in terms of empowerment that he provided me, in times past to get really critical things done for our nation.
Yes. Hey, we're going to be talking about resiliency. So one of the things, resiliency covers a lot of areas, but in your brief bio that I read, which your extended bio will be in the show notes, as well as some other things that you've provided me. But I want to talk about a couple things real quick. The Electromagnetic Defense Task Force, and then move into the initiative that you were a part of there in San Antonio. So can you start off with the EDTF and how that got started and what's going on?
Well, thanks, and it's a great question. EDTF really has a long history dating back to some meetings hosted by, I guess it would be Senator Bob Hall from the Texas Senate. And these were meetings regarding the safety of the U.S. power grid, in particular the Texas ERCOT, to phenomena, both space-based, such as GMD or solar flare, and also EMP, electromagnetic pulse, such as those seen in Hollywood and in reality, dating back to Cold War testing. So the meetings were quite fundamental. Out of that, the American Leadership and Policy Foundation, which is a nonprofit, a nonpartisan national security think tank, really began to work on advocacy for educating our national leadership. And as we continued with a lot of the research that we were doing, we realized that a lot of voices, a lot of leaders weren't listening because there was a lack of official sponsorship. Now, a lot of this had also been kept within the political realm, whether it was congressional committees that were very worthwhile in elevating issues for many, many years, but those had begun to die off. And, by, 2015, 2016, 2017, they were all but gone. And so, and basically with this concern that we were about to lose the continuity for the country, not only in terms of our professional experts that we had available, but our understanding of the issue within the interagency that includes the military and other government agencies, we knew that something had to be done. At the time, I was an aide-de-camp for General Quast and the MAGCOM strategist for Air Education Training Command. And the command handled all of the education and training for the entire Air Force. So, roughly a dozen bases and 80,000 people, a command essentially the size of the Australian military. And so we had quite a lot of opportunity to lead intellectually and from a fact-based R&D perspective. So we used that opportunity to really codify this into the Electromagnetic Defense Task Force, a task force being something in military speak that is actually designed to accomplish a task. And the task for the first EDTF was just to bring legitimacy back to this issue, where a lot of times, if you read, whether it was an article in Popular Science that said, EMP was a EMT threat, or different naysayers, they were really delegitimizing the fact that this is something we need to pay attention to. So the first EDTF was held in Bulger, Maryland, by Air Education Training Command in 2018, shortly after, I think, you and I met up. But we had approximately 170 participants from about 50 different interagency organizations, whether that was the Joint Chiefs of Staff or Microsoft or Lockheed Martin. We had industry, we had folks from academia, and we really wanted to create a holistic look at the challenges that we were facing. And so that was the first event. It was very interesting because at the time I was working on my dissertation, and really the crux of my dissertation was the thesis that America could be aggressed with an unattributable strategic threat. And one of the ways those could manifest was through EMP. And so if that were true, then how would we defend against it? And so that was largely the discussion for the first EDTF, the basis, if you will, for the intellectual evaluation. And so all of these teams of various experts broke into working groups. We had 12 different working groups, each comprised of about 15 to 20 people. And they were very interdisciplinary. So we might have a working group with the nation's leading 5G expert with a missileer in there and a guy from, Microsoft or whatever. The composites were meant to be very holistic. And so all of them worked on the same problem. And we had groups working both in classified and unclassified so that they could have discussions at different levels. And it was really fascinating to see what they came back with. And at the end of it, they came back with the understanding that because of the often unattributable aspects of the types of threats and the way that they manifest today, and attribution is having to do with knowing who did it. And if you can look today in foreign policy, you can see that attribution is very important. Look, for example, at the opportunity that Iran took with Saudi Arabia to disrupt their oil fields, right? They had 15% of their oil production interrupted. But what was the first thing they did? They showcased to the world that this was, in fact, Iran. Here's the drones. These are theirs, right? It was very important from an attributional standpoint. And because we are within the Westphalian system, this is the system that was set up at Westfall in the 1600s that recognizes international boundaries, diplomacy, the rules of war, chivalry, right? This is how mankind keeps himself from going into, the habits of the past that have held men captive to fear and hunger for eons. We have emerged from that, because of democracy and because of the rule of law and, the ideas that have moved through in terms of philosophy from the Age of Enlightenment. Okay, so, you know, these are the things that hold back tyranny. And without attribution, you can bypass a lot of the penalties the a nation might incur if they decide to do something that is strategically harmful to another nation. And so the findings of the first EDTF were published through Air University, and you can go read those at the under the LeMay papers at Air University. And if you want to really have a good read, just skim it. It'll take you about 15 minutes. And at the end of it, you'll be like, ah, man, that's truth. It's truth because the men and women who partook in that really wanted to provide insight for the American people. Because at the end of the day, the EDTF as a task force was about building knowledge and rebuilding legitimacy. And that work is done on the foundation of credibility. So we brought the best of the best together to get that done. And what was interesting is that report immediately circulated through government. It went through the White House. It was the most downloaded and most read report of any published online published document in the history of the Air Force's Air University.
Wow,
that's
great.
That should get your attention.
Yeah, yeah.
And so immediately after that, there was interest at the joint staff level, and in particular from the vice chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Silva. And he brought me in, and General Quast was with me. And he said, so tell us, you know, what you're doing. And we said, we're doing another one. This was 2019. And we said, these are the problems we want to look at. What do you think? And he said, I like it, but here's some extras to add. So official sponsorship at that point came on from the joint staff in 2019. We held the next one at Air University's Center for Wargaming. It was extraordinary because at this event, we had 250 participants. We had more than 50 faculty from Air University, and we ran it like a full war game. And it started off with a 6-minute video that was professionally produced by the university with a scenario that I wrote. And essentially in that scenario, the United States was aggressed, but we didn't know who did it because of the means that were employed.
Right.
And so we did the same thing. This time the White House participated, and almost the entire interagency, every national lab, with minus a couple. We had a lot of the large, tech firms back. I won't name names. But the bottom line is we had at that one, 100 different organizations from academia, industry, and the military, and government. And it was extraordinary because, again, the idea was to build credibility back into this problem set and to make sure that we were spreading knowledge across, the nation of what the opportunities potentially might look like in the future as we encounter increasingly environments that are cognitive, threats or that present cognitive threats rather than physical ones. And that means that creativity and the way in which you employ challenges against the United States is changing. It used to be about whether or not two battleships could go toe-to-toe. And now it's about, can you sink that battleship with really no cost incurred to the one doing the sinking? And that was the genesis, if you will, of the EDTF. We have not had one in 2020. We did not have one. I'm actually going to be meeting again soon with the joint staff, and I do intend to request that they continue the effort because of its value in building knowledge. And the American people are the driver, right, in all things civil defense.
Yes,
we are the most important office, if you will, in the country, and that is the office of citizen. And when we lean, when we lean, if you will, on our, elected officials, they work for us. And it's, us as the people that need to drive the agenda. Would you not agree? So the bottom line is that our agenda is that if we don't have, a safe, reliable, and secure country, then we don't really have a country. So civil defense is very important, and these kinds of efforts like it are very important. But the findings reinforced between both years and the 18 and 19 reports they essentially found that the investment had to be made on the front side in order to potentially avoid catastrophic events associated with very creatively employed attacks against a superpower. And so we continue to proffer that information, and you can read the reports on both of those at Air University under the LeMay papers. They're declassified.
Yes, and the links will be in the show notes of this episode. And I think we must make a note here right up front. The opinions shared on this program are the guests alone and do not constitute endorsement or official position of the U.S. Air Force or the federal government.
Thank you.
End of note. So, because you are still an active duty officer, correct?
I am, yes. So I'm speaking today on my own. These are my own thoughts and my own opinions. And one thing, you know, I'll point back to is after the meeting with General Silva, he instructed me that as we kicked off the second EDTF, to instruct members of the audience and the participants, because some of the scenarios that we were presenting were so unbelievable, but possible,
right,
that he instructed me to tell the audience to suspend disbelief. And so as we began looking at some of the extraordinary vulnerabilities that we face as a nation, I would ask our audience to also suspend disbelief and take the journey with us for a minute, not down the rabbit hole. This is not about rabbit hole. This is about real challenges that we are facing because, and, you know, from a kind of a metaphorical standpoint, rather informed by history, the United States finds itself rather like France did before World War II or in the lead up. And here was a nation that knew that a threat was coming. It was even experiencing that threat or seeing that threat manifest. They made a significant investment by building the Maginot Line. Mm-hmm. And they had a significant shortfall on manpower. And they saw the threat and they did not fail to take action. But what they failed to do was to take the right actions that would allow them to succeed once those threats were manifest. And so even as you know, the Maginot Line was being completed, and it was an incredible bulwark of fortifications, the challenge there was obviously that from the German side, the strategy was updating, and it was now about speed and maneuver, and it had nothing to do with the paradigms of the past that were, you know, essentially anchored to old ideas. And so as we move forward, you know, it lies upon the American people to help educate their decision makers, to help them understand the new kinds of challenges, the ways in which things have evolved and changed from, you know, what we used to understand. And it's become complex and it's much, much harder to deal with than it used to be. But that is one area that we can really make a difference if we understand these in a credible way, if we use good sources, good science, and make reasonable arguments, not, you know, fearful ones, about the changes we can make to close the door on these kinds of things.
Yes. Well, you know, the paradigm was shifted in September 11th, 2001. We cannot afford to have, you know, a childlike ignorance of a threat that is out there, thinking that we are the great United States and nobody can take us down. Every civilization that came before us met its demise at some level. And we may find that demise coming at some point in our future as well. So it just takes somebody thinking outside the box to take us out. And there's a lot of scenarios out there that are outside the box, but very few people consider them because, one, they don't know them, or they say, you know, we've got this that can counter that, or we've got that, you know, we'll find out about that before that even gets here. Well, what if the threat may even already be here? So there's just too many things that can take us down. And what I'm going to, you know, bottom line up front. We need to defend and prepare our most critical infrastructure today. We can't wait till next year. It has to be done now, because if we're going to survive as a nation, we have to be prepared to do what needs to be done for our safety and security as a nation now.
I agree with you, and I would add that I believe that the largest mistake any adversary or outside force acting on the United States will ever make is to underestimate the ingenious of the American people that will activate when facing a threat or a challenge. And that is one of the most tremendous things we have working for us.
I agree.
And I will tell you that this discussion and many aspects of civil defense, national security, our internal and external security, that of our allies and partners, often comes down to political bait, you know, frequently. But there is a way to escape the trap, you know, that often encircles these kinds of discussions, so that we can get beyond it. And there was a philosopher named William James who gave a series of lectures in 1906. And he believed in a theory of philosophy that you may know from Plato and other great thinkers throughout history, Socrates, but it was called pragmatism, right? And this idea of pragmatism, it took debates out of the philosophical realm, ironically, to where we go round and round the tree. And as an example of this, William James provided in one of his lectures in New York, I believe it was, an example of basically a time when he was on a camping trip with several of his colleagues who were also philosophers. And he had been outside the camp, and he came back to find his colleagues arguing about whether or not a squirrel on a tree who keeps its belly to a man, if the man can ever get in front of the squirrel, because every time the man moves, the squirrel counter moves around the tree, and there's just constant movement. And so his group was really at an impasse. Half believed the man could get in front of the squirrel or go around the squirrel, and half believed that the squirrel would never allow the man to get around him. Okay, so here comes William James, and he says, well, and his friends pleaded with him, would you please, you know, side with us? And they made their varying arguments. And he said, well, really, it depends on the fundamental meaning of what you mean by get around the tree. Okay, do you mean that if by going to the right and north and to the left and south and east and west, you know, more or less describing a square box, that the man can get around the squirrel? Then yes, he can. But if you mean by can the man like walk around the squirrel without the squirrel countering his moves, can that practically be done? Then no. So at the end of the day, the idea of pragmatism really hinges on the so what. What does it mean if the man can get around the squirrel? We can debate about all day whether, you know, he gets around it, you know, in one way or another. But what does it really mean? And so in taking these arguments out of the political and putting them back into the pragmatic, it's really important that we get to the so what. And so the so what is, in terms of national resilience, what is the importance of that? And it's not a political debate. It's not one about fear. And the so what is really being seen around the world. And to put it quite mildly, I think General Quast has a great analogy for this, but he said, you know, look, this is like injecting dye right into the veins of our nation. And it's a contrast dye, and it's diagnostic. It has shown us some of the things that many of us have been talking about for many years. But at the end of the day, this contrast dye goes well beyond our borders here. We can see this in Australia. Recently, there was a nationwide exercise that shows that Australia, if its logistics are interrupted in a time of war, that many of the critical elements that they need for their country will be exhausted within a week. Their fuel will be exhausted within 3 months, and their nation will collapse within 3 months. Some of the things are from just the most obscure, you know, missing elements, things you and I maybe would never think of, like chlorine to treat water treatment systems and provide water for across the country. They don't have an adequate supply of that. And so around the world, nations are beginning to understand the need for resilience and to engineer that back in, where after a time of peace and plenty and, you know, just relative permissive environment globally in terms of travel and politics, we took our eye off the ball. And it's time to really get back to the basics. It's time to literally fortify our food, water, sanitation, power grid systems to make sure that those things are able to withstand a shock. And Dr. Holger May at the University of Cologne, he's a frequent lecturer at NATO. I had an interview with him some time back, and I said, so, you know, Dr. May, what do you consider to be resilience? And he said, it's very simple, the ability to take a shock, the ability to take a hit and get back up. And the question is, can we do that? And so this is not a political argument at the end of the day. It's a pragmatic argument based on, if we take a hit, whether it's natural or man-made, can we as a society get back up and keep our freedom intact? Because if you've been at war, if you've done combat around the world, and you've seen other nations, if you understand what communism is, you really truly understand the fragile nature of freedom and the fact that it has to be nurtured by every generation.
And that is the final word for this episode. Be sure to check back next week for episode 2 with David Stuckenberg. Civil defense equals resiliency equals survival. The top-down governmental approach to solve our community resiliency problem has failed us. We need a community-based grassroots approach to solve this problem. To be resilient, it takes preparation, organization, and training to meet the needs of whatever situation we may find ourselves in. Civil defense helps reduce panic in a disaster, and this is why we strongly recommend establishing a community-based civil defense organization in your city or county in partnership with your local emergency manager and community leaders. Let's start a conversation with the guide found on our resources page at our website at civildefenseradio.com. Be sure to check out our regular postings on our Facebook page at Civil Defense Radio and on Twitter at civil_def_radio, where we post information about the many threats we see to our safety and security as a nation. I wish to thank David for being with us this episode, and again, to thank you, our friends and listeners, who are with us on a regular basis. I really appreciate you being with us. So please, be safe, be informed, be prepared, and may God bless you and keep you until next time.